ജയം വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിപാഷകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശരശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം. തിരിലാപ്രവിഷ്ടോം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിപാചകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശരശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ഡ ഗിരിഗോവർധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരിധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായയ്ക്ക് യമനമായയ്ക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഓ പ്രേമനന്ദി. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരാംഗ, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ. നമോ വിഷുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശിവനെ ഭക്തവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി ഭാഷാതിദേശകാരിണി. ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ, ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ, ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ. സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവ. ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ. മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ. ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ. നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവഭാവ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം. ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യദോന്വയാദിതരതശ്ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൺ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യത്സൂരയ. തേജോവാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷാ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി. ധർമ്മപ്രോജിതകൈരവോത്രപരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സദാ വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം. ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാവരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീ തക്ഷണാ. നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോരസിയാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഃ. സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാ. യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം ഹനുഭേദമവേദകൃത്യം വൈവാഹ്യനോ വിരഹകാതരമജ്ജുഹവ പുത്രേതി തന്മയദയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ആനതോസ്മി. യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിഥിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം. നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ. കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുക്കുണിതാദൃതാനനെന്തോഃ മമ വാചി വിചമ്പദാമുരാരേ മധുരിന്ന കണികാപികാപികാവി. നമാവോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമദേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണീ പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശതാരിണി ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ. വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ടശ യാസാം ഹരിഗതോ ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീ ചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമഃ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദര മന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശ മനിഷം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമേ. കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യ പരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാദമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമഃ. ശ്രീമതിരാധികായ നമഃ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. Srimad Bhagavatam, Ekadasha Skandam. What we were discussing last Sunday was the Krishna's instructions to Uddhava on the bhakti process, isn't it? Bhakti Yoga. Krishna mentions that if you look at those four or five verses at the end, starting from 25, verse 25 in the 14th chapter, യഥാഗ്നിനാ ഹേമമലം ജഹാദി മാധം പുനഃസ്വം ഭജതേ ചരൂപം ആത്മാ ച കർമാനുഷയം വിധൂയ മദ്ഭക്തിയോഗേന ഭജത്യഥോ മാം. യഥാ യഥാത്മാ പരിമൃജ്യതേ സോ മൽപുണ്യഗാഥാ ശ്രവണാഭിധാനൈഹി തഥാ തഥാ പശ്യതി വസ്തു സൂക്ഷ്മം ചക്ഷുദ്വൈ അഞ്ജന സംപ്രയുക്തം വിഷയാന്ധ്യായതശ്ചിത്തം വിഷയേഷു വിഷജ്ജതി മാമനുസ്മരതശ്ചിത്തം മയേവ പ്രവിലീയതേ തസ്മാത് അസതവിധ്യാനം യഥാ സ്വപ്നം മനോരഥം ഹിത്വാ മയി സമാധൽസ്വ മനോമദ്ഭാവഭാവിതം. സ്ത്രീണാം സ്ത്രീസംഗിനാം സംഗം തെക്വാ ദൂരതമാത്മവാൻ ക്ഷേമേ വിവിക്തമാസീനം ചിന്തയേന്മാം അതന്ദ്രിതാഹ. ന തഥാസി ഭവൽക്ലേശോ ബന്ധശ്ചാന്യ പ്രസംഗദാഹ യോഷിൽ സംഗാധ്യതാ പുംസോ യഥ തഥാ യഥാ തൽസംഗി സംഗദാഹ. സോ ദേർ ഇൻ ദോസ് വേഴ്സസ് ആസ് ഐ മെൻഷൻ ബിഫോർ ഇൻ ദ ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതം ദർ ഈസ് കഥ. കഥ ഈസ് ദേർ, ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ്? ആൻഡ് ദെൻ ദർ ഈസ് സ്തുതി. And then there is Upadesham. That is how Bhagavadam flows. The flow of Bhagavadam is like that. First there is the pastimes, which is Katha, the history. History part of it. In other words, starting from creation. How? Starting from creation, we see the third canto onwards, Sargam, Visargam, it progresses in that way. So there is Katha in the Srimad Bhagavadam, which you will find. And afterwards, this katha, that's katha is the word which Krishna is referring to here. Yes, the malpunya gatha, that gatha is referring to this katha, the story part of it. So the only difference between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is this katha. Katha is the one that makes the difference. So in Palpa Puranam, it is spoken like a katha. So, in order to create knowledge, jnanam, renunciation, vairagyam, and bhakti, devotion, Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, isn't it? So, if you ask the question, if Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads are not sufficient, if you ask that question, what is so speciality with the Bhagavadam? If you ask that question, that is, the difference is this katha. That makes it different than the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads. Because everyone likes katha, isn't it? Everybody likes katha. So, if you present the message in the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita in the story form, then it attracts people. This was Vedavyasa Maharshi's conclusion. He felt the necessity to speak Srimad Bhagavatam because most of the people were not able to take to Bhagavad Gita or to the Upanishads. They found it very difficult because it is the pure message of the Vedas which comes through Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita. So what they did was, so this is, you can understand also, so long as we are on the bodily concept of life, as much as we think of ourselves as individuals, as long as we are in the bodily identity, we will have a taste for people who have a body. In other words, bodily identity is like that, isn't it? We take interest in others' affairs a lot. Why? Because we are in the body. So therefore, naturally, there is an attraction for others who are also in the body. This is the way it works. It is an unknown thing, but it happens in that way. The bodily identity is such that we get attracted to other story, other individuals in the same way. So this is the same reason. Some people have, they like to hear about themselves, isn't it? They have interest to hear their own story, in other words. So, just like we keep our photos, album and everything, to keep looking at it when you get older, how you looked when you were young, or when you were a child. All these things are coming from that, because we have an attraction for the bodily identity. That is, because of our bodily identity, we feel an attraction for other persons also in the same way. So, now there is a lot of facilities also with the video and all that. People have a lot of facilities to do that, isn't it? Some people, they set up their video in such a way and take their own video. They keep watching that, their own video, what they are doing. Because of the facilities available now, so many things can be done, isn't it? So, So long as we are attached to our own body and we have that strong identity with the body, it is quite natural that we also look into others' personality to follow up with the others' person. It's a natural thing in us that looking at other individuals and seeing their personality or the identity in that way. And also it is quite common that we have this nature to worship others in that personal form, in that personal identity. So as long as it's there, as long as it is like that, we will have a taste for katha. That's how the taste for katha has come. Vedavyasa Maharshi understood this weakness in us. That when he spoke Bhagavad Gita, when he compiled Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads, he found that most of the people could not understand what was spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and they were not so attracted to it practically. He found this difficulty, so he thought that perhaps the best thing to do is to bring the history of those personalities who have followed Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads in their own life, and by taking that and presenting a book to others, people will be more interested to read that. So this is how Srimad Bhagavatam came to our existence. So So it is Vedavyasa Maharshi's plan, this was. It is his own plan to create, start saying stories. Storytelling Vedavyasa Maharshi has started. So when we find there are personalities in the Bhagavatam with whom we can identify somehow, then only then we will feel some connection with spiritual life, isn't it? Only then we will feel some connection with spiritual life. Otherwise, if you read the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita, it looks so off our understanding that it's difficult to relate with it practically. Practically, it's difficult to relate with it, either with Upanishads or with the Bhagavad Gita. It is just the way it is, because the knowledge that is in there, we are in the conditioned state, find that very difficult to relate with Bhagavad Gita or with the Upanishads. So therefore, Upanishad speaks about Brahmavidya, about self-realization, isn't it? You can see, Upanishad's knowledge is completely Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya means about self-realization, the knowledge of the soul, activities of the soul, and how the process of realizing the self. These things are spoken in the Upanishads. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke a lot about karma. Karma Yogam he spoke, isn't it? So, when you read Upanishads, especially with the Brahma Vidya, and when you read Bhagavad Gita, which is a lot centered around karma, first six, seven, more or less six chapters, is referring to karma, isn't it? Karma is the main subject touched in the Bhagavad Gita, from the very beginning, starting from the second chapter. They started discussing Karma Yoga very seriously, Karma Sannyasam, Jnana Karma Sannyasam, Karma Yoga. All those things are centered around karma. Even the second chapter is centered around karma, isn't it? And so much stress is spoken and given on karma that Bhagavad Gita, practically you can see a major part of it is related to karma. So ordinary people, when they read Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads, they will naturally think, were there anybody who has done all these things? This what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads. And if there were anybody was there, we can't find anyone in this world who have followed Bhagavad Gita strictly or who have followed the Upanishads strictly and realized it properly in the life. So, and is there anyone who are practically experiencing this realization of Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads? All these doubts will come to a common man's mind. Most of us are like that, isn't it? We will read Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads and we start thinking, this is not for me. That's the first reaction we will have when you read Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads. Because it is difficult to bring that practically into, apply that into our life, we find it so difficult, isn't it? Even now we know, there was a question asked the other day, that as a devotee he was asking, he was been last 25 or 30 years in Krishna consciousness, and he was asking, how do we apply all this practically into life? That was the question. It is a problem actually that when you read Bhagavad Gita and go through every verse and start, Krishna is saying so many things about karma, about jnanam, about bhakti, about yogam, about dhyanam, maya, so many things are spoken there. And we see practically in our own life to implement that very, very difficult, isn't it? Very, very difficult. So that is why that this necessity came to Veda Vyasa Maharshi understood that simply by giving the knowledge alone, it's not going to happen. Through Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita, simply speaking, giving the self-realization or the knowledge alone is not sufficient. He felt that. It is then that he thought about this process of saying through katha. Katha came in that way. But again, Veda Vyasa has noted there, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see, it starts with katha, but then through katha, he started bringing the stuti, the glorifications of this. Everywhere you will find this, that there will be some opportunity for the demigods to go. Some demon appears, some demigods will get disturbed, they will go to Vishnu or Krishna for shelter and there will be an opportunity to glorify Krishna. Lot of studies you will find there, isn't it? Kunti study, Bhishma study, and Akrura study, Gajendra study, Mahabali study, so many studies, glorifications in the Bhagavatam again and again. It keeps popping up at different places in the Bhagavatam. So how did that happen? Because Veda Vyasa Maharshi's intention was not just to speak katha. Through katha he wanted to get this Brahma Vidya into us, which is the knowledge of the soul, the self-realization. How to get us out of this bodily identity. This is the goal behind it. So to do that, he followed this process. First through the katha, take us to the studi or the glorifications. And when you study the glorifications, you will see that those personalities, when they glorified Krishna, their knowledge start coming through that. Their realizations, in other words. Akrura's realization, Kunti Devi's realizations. Slowly, it brings gives us an impression that if Kunti Devi and Bhishma Pitamaha and many others could follow this process, why should we not do the same thing? These thoughts will appear in our mind. In order to generate that thought, Vedavyasa has formed this pattern of first the katha stories and then the glorifications, and after that the pure knowledge of the soul, exactly like in the Upanishads, taken into, which is known as Upadesham, the Brahmopadesham. What is that? You will see there in the 11th canto when Krishna speaks to Uddhava, direct talk about the truth, directly speaking the truth to Uddhava, without any mincing with anything else, just straight talk to Uddhava about the truth. And also you will see Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikshit in the same way in the 12th canto, before he left this world. Before Parikshit left this world, you will see there in the same way, Sukadeva Goswami is talking to Parikshit, what the truth is. Aham Brahma Param Dhamma Brahma Aham Paramam Padam. That's all Brahmopadesham, it is called in the Bhagavadam. So Bhagavadam flows through these three stages. So you can see here that if the question comes, has anyone followed all this? And was there anybody in this world like that who have perfected all these things? And this question, if you ask that question, immediately the identification comes there, isn't it? Identification has started there itself, because that is how the personality comes into it. The knowledge that is spoken in the Upanishads as well as in the Bhagavad Gita is all about the soul and self-realization. But has anyone followed it through and practiced in life and became perfect in that way? If that any personality has been there like that, when that question is asked, immediately personality comes into it. Isn't it? Personality comes into it. So Valmiki, when he wrote Ramayanam, also has the same doubt. So the first verse itself in the Ramayanam, what Valmiki asked Narada Maharshi was the same question. So, because there were so many qualities Narada Maharshi has spoken, and Valmiki asked Narada Maharshi, was there anyone in this world ever with all these qualities what you have spoken about? This question was asked by Valmiki to Sri Narada Maharshi. So, when we try to remove our own defects or our own impurities in us, that means what I mentioned before as Upadhi Dosham. Upadhi Dosham, these are all Upadhis, isn't it? Material body, the mind, intelligence, ego. These are all our Upadhi. Upadhi means it is through this that we relate with this world, through these things. That is why it's called Upadhi. Pure soul inside does not have any necessity to relate with this material world. When it has to relate with the material world, it happens through the body, mind, intelligence and the ego. So, because it is like that, when you are trying to, and all these impurities are in the Upadhi. Upadhi has the impurities, isn't it? Like body is a Upadhi, and body has its problems. That is its impurity, in other words, birth, death, old age and disease. Mind has its own impurity. What is that? Mind means continuous chittavritti, unable to control anything, and completely absorbed in the external world all the time. That's the impurity in the mind, chittavritti, which also we call it as the sangalpam vigalpam, which appears in the form of sangalpam and vigalpam. Or we also call it in a different ways. We say that the mind has got this problems that constantly vigalpa pradhanyam, they call it. Vigalpam appears inside in the form of chittavrittis, comes in there. So, and mind has got, as I mentioned before, different states also, isn't it? Kashaya sthiti, all that what we talked about before. Same way, intelligence has its own impurities in intelligence also. Why? Three modes of material nature is there in the intelligence. Sattvam, rajasa, tamasa. So, Upadhis have got the impurities. Soul has no impurities. All the impurities are in the Upadhi. That has to be taken out. That is our effort now. Once we get that out, what will happen? We will lose all these things one after the other. The mind, the body, the intelligence, everything. And the pure spiritual identity shines. Spiritual identity remains then. So that is the question, that we know that when we start doing that, it's a really big task, isn't it? What they call as the Herculean task. It's a really big task. We all know our own problems, what we have got. And it is impossible practically to change that nature in us, isn't it? On the one side, the three modes of material nature. On the other side, all the chitavritti is coming. On the other third side, this body is giving all kinds of problems. Body is demanding so many things from life. So in three fronts, you have to fight. Above all that, this ego. More than anything else. And it is not an easy thing to get out of all these things. We know that very well. We say like this, that purification we keep saying. But after 30, 40 years, if there is some measuring system, how much we have purified, if you look at it, you can see that there is not a lot of purification happened. Once it so happened that, washermen, we call dhobis in India, isn't it? They carry clothes on the top of the donkeys to the river to wash the clothes. In the olden times, it was quite common. Now washing machines have come, so they've lost all their jobs. So prior to that, the washerman will have his own donkeys, three or four donkeys he will have. He will load them with the clothes, collect the clothes from different houses, load them onto the donkeys, and he will take them to the river. And rivers had full of water those days. Now there is no water also, because they built all these dams and everything dried up. And so everything has become difficult for them. But anyway, in the past, that was the system. So one washerman had four donkeys. He had four donkeys. And he has loaded all of them with clothes. And he was taking them to the river bank. Coming from home, quite a few miles he has to travel to the river, because there's plenty of water then. He'll wash them there and he will dry them on the river bank. In the sand, they will put all the clothes. And by evening, when everything is dried, he will collect them, take them home, and then deliver it to the different houses. This was the system. So he came with these four donkeys with clothes on it. And on the way, he had to go to toilet or something like that. So he came and stood near there was a small forest he had to go through. So when he got there, what he did, three donkeys had, and the donkeys have one good quality. If the first one does, all the other one will follow. You have to only control the first one. The remaining ones will just follow without looking this way or that way. So the first one, the three donkeys had ropes around its neck. And because he would require about 15-20 minutes away from them, he decided to tie the first three donkeys onto some tree. And he brought the fourth donkey also there. Fourth donkey didn't have any rope. Only the three donkeys had the rope. So he tied all the three donkeys to the tree. And the fourth one, he brought it and left it there. And then he wanted to tie the fourth one, because he didn't have a rope. So somebody was sitting there, he went up to him and asked him, "Have you got a rope so that I can tie the fourth donkey also to the tree and I can go for my business," whatever he wanted to do. So the man who was sitting there, he was observing all these things. So he told this washerman, "You tie the three of them to the tree. Fourth one, you just take one of the ropes and show with the hand that you are tying the fourth one. And the fourth one will stay, it won't move from there. It will think it has also been tied to the tree," he says to the washerman. So washerman tied the three of them to the tree, and the fourth one with the hand he showed as though he was tying that one also to the tree. As soon as he did that, the donkey stood there without moving. So he thought, okay, donkey will stay. Till then the donkey was showing a little bit of resistance, wanted to move around, but as soon as he showed with the hand that he is tying the donkey, it stood there. Washerman went. After a few minutes he came back. He untied the three donkeys and they started walking. The fourth one, he started beating the donkey, it won't move. So he says, the other man was still sitting there, who has told him to show with the hand to tie the donkey. So he says to this man that, why is he not moving? He says, I have not tied him, but why is he not moving? He says, as far as donkey is concerned, you have tied him. You have tied him. So just like you have untied the other donkeys, you show the same thing to the fourth donkey. And then the fourth donkey will also go, he said. So he did exactly the same thing. And then the fourth donkey started moving, like the first three donkeys. What do you think the story is about? The story is about us. Why is it? Bandho Moktai Divyakya Gunadome Namastuda Gunasya Maya Mulatwal Name Mokshona Bandhanam. Krishna is saying to Uddhava, actually there is no such thing called bondage. There is no such thing called liberation either. But somehow or the other, like the donkey is thinking, we are also thinking we are bound. We are stuck. We are in the body. This is my identity. This is similar, just like the donkey was shown. We are also, this impression is in our head that we are this body. Krishna is saying that to Uddhava. So, practically, like the donkey thought it was tied, we are also thinking we are tied to this body. Like the liberated souls, if you ask them, even though they may be within the body, they will say they are not in the body. They are in the body, but as far as their realization is concerned, they are not in the body anymore. That is the point. So we are saying here that the Valmiki asked Narada Maharshi the same question. Valmiki asked Narada Maharshi the same question. Said, was there anyone who have all these qualities, what you have, who is a perfection? A personality who is completely perfect in all aspects. And is it possible to have a person with all these qualities, what you have spoken about? Narada Maharshi was questioned by Valmiki. So such a perfection, whether it is possible in the human form, especially in that physical form, if it is possible or not, and it is this doubt that has resulted in the Valmiki writing Ramayana. Ramayana came out like that. Valmiki asked this question to him. Tapaswadhyaya niratam. It says, the verse says, tapaswadhyaya niratam. The verse says, tapaswadhyaya niratam tapasvi vagvidam varam naradam paripaprachu Valmiki muni pungavam. This is the first verse in the Ramayana. It says, tapaswadhyaya niratam tapasvi vagvidam varam naradam paripaprachu Valmiki muni pungavam. He says, in other words, says tapaswadhyaya niratam. Is there any personality like that? He says, who Sri Valmiki Maharshi is asking him. That both of you have to ask, look at this one way. Both Sri Narada Maharshi and Valmiki, both are tapasvi, isn't it? Tapasvi means they have performed a lot of austerities and penances. That's their way of life, full of austerities and penances. So both of them are tapasvi. So they says to him, tapaswadhyaya niradam. Valmiki, who is asking this question, is a tapasvi. And Narada Maharshi is also tapasvi. Narada Maharshi is also tapasvi. So there is no point in asking an ordinary person this question. Ordinary person, this question. Because ordinary person won't know. Ordinary person won't know. But Valmiki has this tapasya behind him, austerity behind him. And Sri Narada Maharshi is also tapasvi. So Valmiki is asking Sri Narada Maharshi, tapasvadhyaya niradam tapasvi vagvidam varam. Is he so tapasvi? Is there so much tapasya? Tapasya means this one who has performed intense austerities and penances is tapasvi. He is tapasvi. He says here that, is there tapasvi vagvidam varam? Naradam paripaprachu. Narada Maharshi asked this question.
Valmiki Muni Pungavam. Valmiki, who is best among the great among the sages. That is there any personality like that? So it was then that the Valmiki's answer was that Valmiki asked this question. So normally when these qualities are mentioned, Valmiki was looking for someone with all these great qualities personally present in that person. They were present in that person. That's what he was looking for. If you take ordinary people, it's a big difference there, isn't it? There's a big difference in our ordinary thinking. We also like people with a lot of perfection in them. We also have an attraction for that. Those who are perfect in their life, isn't it? In their dealings in this world, and in their life, personal life, those who are perfect in doing things, people get attraction to that. People get attraction to that. So that is why perfection, everybody likes it. But people generally won't inquire about that perfection like the way Narada Maharshi, Valmiki has asked the question to him. Valmiki has asked Narada Maharshi. We won't inquire into such depth. But when we see perfection, we like it. Someone who is very charitable, or one who is very considerate to others, or those who are very concerned about poor people, and for the, what in the politician's language, downtrodden, and things like that, they say, isn't it, who gives shelter to everybody, that nature. So we may not see them in world, but even if we see them in film, we get very affected by that. Oh, he may have done just like, if you have given charity in the movie, that's enough. We think that he is very charitable. That's how it affects people. And that is how movie industry people have come to the politics, because of this. And people get carried away by that easily. Not so much here now, but in India, in every field, whether it's in Hindi or Tamil or all other fields, movie actors come to politics later. In Hindi also, in Tamil also, a lot. They come from movie industry, and they were all heroes and they have done wonderful things in the movies, and they have given a lot of charity in the movie. And people start thinking, oh, he's very charitable. They start thinking about him. It happens. So that's why it says here that their charity and their patriotism and things like that, they sometimes take the role of some poor people in the movie. Something like daily wages, he's working somewhere, and things like that. And a lot of people thinking that, oh, he's such a person, but in the movie he has appeared like that. So that things attracts people. And whether it is correct or not, whether he is that nature or not, that is immaterial. But in the film he has got it. So that is sufficient for him. But when you see that in the movie, you naturally feel some feeling develops from the heart, that, oh, he has these qualities in him, whether he has really got it on it or not. So without any external effect, this has an input into our thinking. It has an input into our thinking. Just like a tonic, it affects us somehow. And we are watching that, and ordinary people are satisfied even if they see this in the movie. So Valmiki is asking this question to Narada Maharshi. In our time, that means Narada Maharshi is in Valmiki's time, is there anyone who has all these qualities what Narada Maharshi has spoken? He says here that konyasmin sampradam loge gunavan satyavan dharma sreshcha kritashnyascha satyahatyo dadavradaha. In the next verse in the Ramayanam, he says there that the konyasmin sampradam loge gunavan kascha viryavan dharmascha kritajna cha satyavakyo dridavrata. These are the qualities what Valmiki is mentioning to Sri Narada Maharshi. One who is perfection in dharmam, one who is perfection in truthfulness, one who is perfection in firmly in determination. And all these qualities, Viryavan Gunavan, who has got the heroic nature and all these great qualities. Kwasmin Sampradam Logi Gunavan Ka Viryavan Dharmanya Kradanya Cha Satya Vakyo Dhradavradaha. He says all these things to him. And who is really that person in the present world who has all these qualities in one person? Is anyone like that? He asked this question to whom? To Narada Maharshi. So what did Narada Maharshi say to him? Narada Maharshi says to him that if you say to Valmiki, sometime he existed in the past, that was not sufficient. He was asking right now, is there anyone with all these qualities? And there is a list of qualities after that he is talking about here. That charidena chako yuktam sarvabhudeshu kohidaha vidvan ka asamarthaja kaja ega priyadarshanaha atmavan ko jidakrodho didiman ka anasuyagaha kasya bibhadi devaja jadasaurasya samyuge. These are all the qualities what he is talking about. Who is that whose contact is without any blemishes and who has respect for all beings, all living entities, who is very able and also he is very unique to look at, very good looking in every way. Then he says, who is that courageous one? Atmavan ko jita krodho, one who has complete control over his senses and who is free from anger, brilliant, non-jealous, everything. And dudiman ka anasuyagaha, who is free from envy or non-jealous. Kasya bibhadi devacham, all other demigods are also fearful of him. And so rasasya samyugayam, and when he goes to fight in the war, even the demigods get frightened of him. Is there someone like that? He asked this question to him. And he says there that editi ichami aham shodam param kartu kauduhalam hime maharshetvam samarthosi yadam evam vidham naram. He says that you are a great personality, Valmiki says to Narada Maharshi, to know if there is anyone like that, and I would like to know about him. This is how he inquired from Narada. So in the Valmiki Ramayanam, the first 4 or 5 verses begins like this. First of all, this is, you have to remember, one tapasvi, which is personality who has performed severe austerities and penances. Like Sri Valmiki Maharshi is asking another tapasvi, Narada Maharshi, this question. This is how Ramayanam began. So obviously Vedavyasa Maharshi saw this. So when he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, naturally these thoughts must have gone through him. That how, as soon as you bring it to a personality level, it attracts people. It attracts people. This is in our nature. It is an ingrained thing in everyone, isn't it? As it is spoken in the form of personalities, we get attracted to it. But if it is spoken purely the transcendental knowledge, there is not much of a attraction. So that is what he says here. Then Srinada Maharshi says that there is somebody, then he says there that normally these qualities are there in great personalities among the demigods, sometimes you will find. But here he insisted, is there any human being like that? That was the question. Is there any human being with all these qualities? So he insisted there in that time that he mentions that any personality, Naraha, he says there, that Shrutvaja Meda Trilogam Trilogatnya Na Valmiki Naradovacham Shruyadam Idijama Nritya Prakhrudosam Vakyam Abravid Bahavo Durlaboja Eva Yetvaya Kiridida Gunaha Muni Vakshyamiham Budhva Taikshutva Shrutayam Naraha. He wants to know if there is a human being who has all these great quality. You have spoken about many, many great qualities, which is unattainable even for great emperors, but to talk about ordinary people, even for emperors, but such a man with such merits, I am going to talk about it. He says like that. And then Narada started speaking to Valmiki the famous verses in the Ramayana. That's which was expanded later on by Valmiki. Narada Maharshi was Valmiki's guru before he wrote Ramayanam, isn't it? It is from instructions from Narada Maharshi, Valmiki started compiling Ramayanam. It was, and then he talks about that at that time, say, then Ikshvaku. In Ikshvaku's dynasty, Ikshvaku was mentioned there. You know Ikshvaku. Ikshvaku's name was mentioned by Narada Maharshi. Why was Ikshvaku's mentioned? Ikshvaku was an important personality in the Solar dynasty. the reason why is that among the great powerful kings who appeared in the Solar dynasty, and the first personality is Ikshvaku. Krishna also quotes Ikshvaku, isn't it? In the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna says there that imam vivasvade yogam proktavanaham avyayam vaivasvan manuve praha manur ikshvakuve bravid, he says. So Swayambhuva Manu, then Vaivasvada Manu comes. It is in Vaivasvada Manu's dynasty, this Solar dynasty comes. So he says there, imam, I have spoken this yoga system to Vivasvan. Imam Vivasvade yogam proktavanaham avyayam, this transcendental knowledge which is the reality and which avyayam, which will never get destroyed. And then Vaivasvan Manuve Praha Manu Ikshvakuve Bravid. Manu has spoken to Ikshvaku. So Krishna says about Ikshvaku in the Bhagavad Gita. I think it is in the fourth chapter. Yeah. So fourth chapter. Manu Ikshvakuve Bravid. So here also, in Ramayanam also, that Ikshvaku's case has come, and why he was so prominent, Ikshvaku was so prominent. So this Vaivasvan revealed to Manu, and Manu revealed to Ikshvaku. And all Ikshvaku's children were jnanis. They were all realized souls. Ikshvaku's children, they were all realized souls. And the whole parampara, or that disciplic succession, is full of jnanis, realized souls in that parampara. That has happened. Therefore, in that, he mentions here that Narada Maharshi says, it is that Ikshvaku Vamsham, Ikshvaku's race, or Ikshvaku's dynasty, that this personality has appeared. Sri Narada Maharshi says like that there. So when he says that, he says to him that the now Sri Narada Maharshi is saying here, Buddhiman Nidiman Vagmi, Buddhiman Nidiman Nagmi, Shiliman Shatru Nabharaha, Vibulasmo Mahabahu, Kambugrivo Mahahanu, Mahorakshu Maheshwaso, Guda Jaru, Jaru Rarindama, Ajanu Bahu, Sushira, Sulata, Suvikrama, Samasak Vibhakshana, Anga, Snigdhavanu, Pratapavan, Pinavaksan, Vishalaksho, Asmivan, Shubhalakshanan. He's talking about Ramachandra. So Ramachandra was introduced like that. And after saying all that, in very few verses, whole story of Ramayanam was spoken by Narada Maharshi to Valmiki. And whole story about Ramachandra, he heard from Narada Maharshi. Very happily he heard everything from him. And then Narada Maharshi left. Valmiki also left. Valmiki went to Tamasa River, and he is wandering around in Tamasa River with Bharadwaja Maharshi, another great sage. They were wandering there. It was at that time, you can see the impact of saying stories. What happened to Valmiki at that time? Valmiki heard all this story of Ramayanam from Narada Maharshi. And it had its effect on Valmiki. It had its own effect on Valmiki. And that you can see what happened when Valmiki walked on the banks of this river, Tamasa River, when he was walking through. So, when he was walking through that, his mind in his inside, he was feeling a great happiness, feeling a great peace and happiness inside. Our Valmiki was experiencing at that time. His disciple Bharadwaja Maharshi was also with him. They are walking together in that place at that time. So their conversation, if you look in Ramayanam, you will see what they were discussing at that time. So there he says, Valmiki is saying to Bharadwaj, look at this tree, look at the sky, look at the earth, look at the birds which are making beautiful sounds in the forest, when there is a forest also, and the river bank, they're walking. Naturally, whole discussion was centered around the nature, which is an indication that they were feeling so immense happiness that they were able to derive great pleasure from the nature. So, so it is only possible to find some attraction in the nature if you have some inward looking nature. Otherwise it won't happen. Most of us, we don't see any nature, do we? We only see the cars and all the specifications of the car, everything will be inside our head. But nothing about the nature. But Valmiki, that conversation between Valmiki and Narada Maharshi is to pointing out to us that they were both in a very happy mood, walking through the, wandering through that riverbank and watching the forest and observing various things happening in the forest. That's why that they say like that, that the purity inside, that the consciousness is so pure. Normally our happiness is gossiping, isn't it? When we get to talk about somebody else, that's our happiness, the gossiping. But Valmiki and Bharadwaja Maharshi, they were discussing about the nature, what they were observing. And that is what, that's let's say the Tamasa River, which was flowing there, the water was so pure. And sometimes when the river, if you look at the rivers, if the water is very clean, if you look inside, you can see the bottom of the river. It was so pure. The water was so pure that you can see the bottom of the river. The riverbed at the bottom, you can observe that, isn't it? Even sometimes, now you can also see sometimes. But if the river is not so deep. But anyway, that is what he wanted to say this here, that yadha yadhalma parimarjyade sau malpunya katha shravana abhidhanehi. Krishna is saying there that if you keep hearing about Krishna, eventually it will get purified inside. It will get purified inside. Purification will happen. Then what will happen? Tada tada pasyadi vastu sushmam. That when you start seeing like that, you can see inside this consciousness, inside us, there is the soul. Soul will be noticed at that time. Right now, because it is covered with all the impurities, we do not perceive the presence of the soul inside. What he says here, what Sri Narada Maharshi and Valmiki's conversation is to indicate to us, that when he heard katha from Sri Narada Maharshi, Valmiki's inside became so pure, just like he looked into the water and could see the bottom of the clean water. Similarly, inside that purification has happened to Valmiki. So, how did this happen? Because of hearing Ramayanam. Malpunya gada shravana bhidhane. So this katha shravanam, or hearing about Krishna from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it will purify us. It will purify and take away all the impurities from inside. If you ask the question that all these stories, is that history? If you ask that question, then you have to say it is not history. Bhagavatam is not history. It's not written like a history book. In history, what do you write? You don't touch the personalities, qualities very much. what incidents, what has happened in the history, that's what you will mention. So not only that, history is past, it's gone, isn't it? It's gone. When you read history, it does not hit, influence you in the same way like you read Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam was written in such a way that the goal was it should create bhakti, jnanam, vairagyam, devotion, renunciation and knowledge in a person. That is the effect of that. So sacrificing nature, tyagam, renunciation, vairagyam, shanti, peacefulness, satyanishtha, truthfulness and love for others, friendship. So these qualities should develop in a person. That was the intention of writing Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's not written like a story, and the purpose of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is also katha shravanam, it is called, isn't it? The benefit of that is not to hate anybody and also to develop friendship to everyone and be truthful in life and things like that. But if you say all these things, it won't happen. We will hear that, and but we will say it's not practical. We'll say like that. But when you hear about personalities who have followed them and lived that life, it will have a direct effect on us in that way. So if we can't see these qualities in a person anytime, then the next best option is hearing about it. This is how hearing Bhagavatam has come into existence. If you have somebody with all the qualities, what Bhagavatam is talking about, if you have that presence of that person, that is sufficient to change our heart. We will be affected by that, isn't it? By that person's qualities. It will affect us. But when we don't have that, the next option, the next best option is hearing about that person who had those qualities. So if we do like that, it will happen. One day that purification will happen. This is how it works. The purification will happen, then that is a known thing. That is this people have tested for so many lifetimes. They have tested this and they have found that katha shravanam, hearing Bhagavatam, hearing katha, is the easiest process to influence people. If you want to change somebody's heart, the easiest process, because they get an opportunity to hear Bhagavatam and different great, great devotees in the Bhagavatam, and they will have an unknown impact on our own way of thinking in life. Just like you can see, when you hear Mahabharatam or when you hear Ramayanam, naturally our mind think about Lord Ramchandra's great qualities, isn't it? Similarly, Vibhishana's that devotion to Ramchandra, and Hanuman's devotion to Ramachandra, and Lakshmana's devotion to Ramachandra, Sita Devi's devotion to Ramachandra. They are all different personalities in the Ramayanam, isn't it? Sita Devi is Ramachandra's wife, but Sita Devi's love for Ramachandra and that respectful way of speaking to Ramachandra all the time, this becomes an inspiration for others who are also in a similar body. Similarly, younger brothers, they see how they should relate with the elder brother. When they see how Lakshmana dealt with Ramachandra, they respect what he showed the elder brother, and how Lakshmana carried out the instructions what was given to him by his mother Sumitra when he left the palace, isn't it? Ramam Dasharatham Vidhi. You should consider Ramachandra as Dasharatha, he says, like your father. So you can see that when Ramayanam was read and followed by people, there was no family quarrel. Nowadays all brothers fight straight away, isn't it? That as soon as they get married, then starts whole problem. It's like a Kurukshetra goes on in the house. So why has this come like that? Why has it happened like that? Because another generations, Ramayanam particularly, has taught us this one thing. How Lakshmana related with Ramachandra. Never spoke one word to upset Ramachandra. And at the same time, exactly like a younger brother, treated Ramachandra like a father. Like a father. Ramam Dasharatham Vidhi. That is what the instruction from Sumitra to Lakshmana when Lakshmana left the palace with Dasharatha. Then what else he said to her? What else she told him? Mam Ramam Dasharatha Mam Vidhi Janagal Maja. You should consider Sita Devi like me, like Sumitra Devi, and respect her in that same way. It is Ramchandra's wife is Sita Devi, Lakshmana's brother. So Lakshmana was told, you should respect Sita Devi just like you, treating me in the same way. When this, there was no problem there also. Ramam Dasharatham Vidhi, Mam Vidhi Janagal Maja. Ayodhya Adavim Vidhi. When you are in Ayodhya, when you are in the forest, you think you are as though you are in Ayodhya. You derive the same pleasure and happiness from the facilities what's available there. Ayodhya Adavim Vidhi. Gachatatha Yatha Sukham. With these thoughts in mind, you go, there will be no problems. Sumitra said to Lakshmana. And Lakshmana went like that. And Lakshmana behaved very well. So, how a younger brother should deal with the elder brother? Ramayanam is the standard. How a wife should deal with the husband? Ramayanam is the standard for that. So you will see all these things, that hearing about these personalities. Similarly, Vibhishana and Ravana. You see Vibhishana's bhakti to Ramachandra. And also when he found that the war was going to happen, and what Ravana has done was the worst thing what one could do, then Vibhishana stood up and spoke to Ravana that please do this, go back and hand over Sita Devi to Ramachandra and apologizes and fall at his feet, you will not be killed, otherwise you are inviting death. He said to him, isn't it? Vibhishana said this, gave the proper advice to his brother at the right time. Although Ravana did not listen to it. That's another thing. Similarly, you can see from Hanuman that Anjaneya Swami's bhakti, that devotion in all circumstances, that surrender to Ramachandra. So everything in Ramayana, those personalities inspires people. This is quite natural. That's why when it comes through personalities, it attracts us. People, without knowing anything else, as soon as they see Anjaneya Swami's deity somewhere, they immediately fall down and pay their respects. From nowhere, without any provocation, it comes in a natural way from inside the heart. Same thing with Ramachandra, Lakshmana, Sita Devi, everybody, in the same way. So, when it's presented through Ramayanam, it had a powerful influence on the people's thought. They started, that is the power of Katha, isn't it? When you introduce, Katha means personality, isn't it? Introducing personalities through Katha, that was the purpose. So, all the good qualities, what's necessary for a devotee to develop and get this purification to happen, Ramayana was written in that way. And same thing you will see in Mahabharatam also. When you start reading Mahabharatam, personalities like Vidura, Draupadi, Kunti Devi, and all the Pandavas, their noble qualities immediately attracts everyone. Whereas when you read about the Kauravas, Duryodhana, Dushasana, Dushala and all that, we start feeling a little hesitation that we should not become like that. Immediately we think like that. Even if we are like that, we don't want to be like that, as a thought will come in our mind, isn't it? So, how personality affects us very quickly. Why? Because we are personality, we are in the body. This is why. So long as we are in the body, we like to hear about someone who is in another body. And if that person is in perfection, then we will naturally follow that person without any difficulty. This is why it is Krishna is saying this here. Yatha yadhalma parimrajyadesau malpunya gatha shravana abhidhanehi. That if you keep on hearing about Krishna, automatically a feeling will come inside for Krishna. We don't have to, you may not know it, notice it yourself, but that subtle level, how it will start working from inside. Tadha tadha pashyadi vastu sushmam. Then when that happens, quietly, when the purification happens inside, that soul inside which is Krishna's part, that is there, it will start manifesting in a natural way. This is what the principle behind Kathashravanam is. So that's why he was saying here. Ramanujacharya's spiritual master was Periyanambi. There was Periyanambi, he was called, he was there. So he used to have, every day, they used to read Ramayanam. Ramayanam was the main book they read, not Srimad Bhagavatam. Ramayanam was in the Ramanuja tradition. Ramayanam was their great literature. They studied Ramayanam very well. So when Ramayanam was read every day, he had many, many disciples. Many disciples, Periyanambi, Ramanujacharya was one among them. And many of those disciples will sit in Srirangam and they will hear Ramayanam in the Srirangam temple. And also in the Varadaraja Perumal temple in Kanchipuram also, where Ramanujacharya originally stayed in that temple. So all these, they will go in groups from one temple to another, continuously singing Kirtanam and glorifying Ramachandra. And whenever they find a temple, they will sit there and they will discuss Katha. And this was their life. That's how they lived their life. So it is at that time Ramanujacharya was speaking Ramayanam. The spiritual master was speaking Ramayanam. And many, many devotees were hearing from him, from Periyanambi. So a lot of them, they will sit and listen to Ramayanam for a few years. And after that, they'll go. After that, they'll go to their own places. And they will start their own groups there. Their own groups, they will start there. This is how Ramayanam was spread. They didn't have all the modern systems, isn't it? Everything has to be done on a personal level. But that's the way it will work. It won't work the other way. Through internet and all, it's difficult to have that. Although all that is happening now, that association through internet. But it is not practical to have the same effect of the personal association they had. So one of those disciples, and they will learn and they will go away and they will form their own groups in different places, in villages, and they will discuss Ramayanam in the same way. Valmiki Ramayanam is 24,000 verses. Added to that, you have another 32,000 verses from Yoga Vasishtam. So it's enough for the life, isn't it, to talk about 56,000 verses altogether. So Valmiki Ramayanam became famous in that way, Valmiki's Ramayanam. And then they will study other Ramayanams also, because there's so many other Ramayanam written, like Tulsidas Ramayanam, famous one. They'll study them as well in order to see their realizations from Ramayanam. So like this, Ramayanam became very famous. Now among this Periyanambi, who was the teacher or Ramanujacharya's spiritual master, he spent 24 years with him hearing Ramayanam, and he never left. He never left him. He never left him. So it was also very difficult. He will sit in the front, and it was difficult to sit next to him. Always it was difficult. Because some instances he will get so excited hearing Ramayanam that he will react to it in his own way. So in one instance what happened was that Anjaneya Swami, Hanuman, they were preparing for the battle. Ramayana Yudhakandam was being discussed. Yudhakandam is the last canto in the Ramayana. So when Yudhakandam was discussed, that the Ravana arrived there on the scene with his 10 heads and big chariot and everything. And Hanuman, Anjaneya, knowing how powerful he is, he doesn't have any fear in his mind. He never knew what his fear in life means, isn't it? He jumped onto the chariot where Ravana was sitting and smacked him. And smacked Ravana. Because prior to that, he has visited Lanka before, isn't it? And all those things happened, you know what happened in Sri Lanka at that time. So this time, he jumped onto the chariot and punched Ravana. As soon as he punched, this disciple of Periyanambi who was sitting, he got so excited, he punched the man who was sitting next to him to tell him that this is how he punched, he said. And he punched the man next to him. So naturally, people were hesitant to sit next to him because he gets so affected by the story, by Katha. And then what can you do? That he was like that. That is how absorbed he was in the story. We shouldn't think bad of him because he was so absorbed in the story. That story is used to influence him so much. He used to feel so much identification with the story. So much identification with the story. So he will enjoy everything, whatever he heard. So there are many stories about him, this personality. Just like Ramanujacharya and Periyanambi, we have a lot of stories about him. So, as I mentioned also one story before, that this Vibhishana surrender, which is an important topic in Ramanuja Sampradaya. Ramanujas, because that is a very backbone of the Vishishtadvaitam thinking, Advaitis thinking. That Ramanuja was, they were reading, they were talking about Vibhishana coming to see Ramachandra. Vibhishana spoke to Ravana. Ravana wouldn't listen. He wouldn't care. So Vibhishana came, left, decided to leave Ravana's association and come and surrender to Ramachandra. So he said goodbye to Ravana and left. So when he left, three Rakshasas also left with him. Isn't it? Three Rakshasas also left with him. So they come and they were standing in the sky. Those standing in the sky ready to come and see Ramachandra at that time. So, when he left Lanka, he told Ravana that that I have given you the right advice. Since you are not able to take it, I don't want to offend Ramachandra anymore. What already you have done enough. Now, I don't want to offend him anymore. I am going to surrender unto him and take his shelter, he said. Ravana says to him, you are not my brother. He says, you are not my brother. He says like this, that if Brahmanas have got tapasya, if Brahmanas have tapasya, tapasya means austerities in them. And because generally Brahmanas will have austerities, Brahmana means austerities, isn't it? Austerity is the wealth of the Brahmana. And women have chabalabuddhi. Chabalabuddhi means their intelligence is flickering always. Their intelligence is always changing. And if it is like that, if that's all true, then I cannot trust you, he says. Ravana says to him, Vibhishana, that I cannot trust you because I should be frightened of you because you are my relative, you are my brother. I should be frightened of you because it is as true as that, that like the Brahmanas have the austerities as it's as their part, similarly I should be only frightened about my own relative, you. Pointing out to Vibhishana. He says this to him. So anyway, saying this, Ravana told him to leave the palace straight away. He says, you're not allowed to stay here. I'm going to kill you, he said. So Vibhishana had no choice. He has to leave. So he leaves. Vibhishana leaves with three Rakshasas also somehow who were friendly with Vibhishana. Left along with him. They left the palace. And they came over. And he says, Ravana to Sharanam Gadaha. They surrendered to, they left Ravana and they wanted to surrender to Ramachandra. So, this surrender of Vibhishana, Sri Vaishnavas will talk about it in very depth. They can talk a lot about that. That's surrender. So, the situation is here that Ravana's, Vibhishana's situation is now that he cannot go back, you see. If he goes back, Ravana won't accept him. Suppose Ramchandra has rejected him. He says, okay, I'll go back to Ravana. Ravana is not going, Ravana will really give him a hell that time. Ravana will tell him that, why have you come back? He will ask the question. And whether Ravana will let him live, it is doubtful. But Ramchandra has not accepted him also. So when he came down here, that immediately Ramchandra, the message came that, he has come to surrender. Vibhishana has come to surrender. So when the message came, Ramchandra said to them, all the vanaras or associates who were there, they immediately called for a meeting, all of them, and they all came. When they all came, Vibhishana is standing there in the sky waiting for the decision whether he can come and surrender. So when these vanaras, all the monkeys who came there, Ramchandra put up this issue before them and told them that Vibhishana has come to surrender to us. Should we accept him or not? He said, should we accept him or not? So one among the many leaders of these monkeys who were there, one of them said that we should not accept him. We should not accept him. Another person said we should accept him, but we should post one spy behind him to see what his intentions are and keep a watch on him all the time. Another person, different people gave different interpretations of all that. And they then he asked Hanuman, should we accept him? Hanuman said, yes, we should accept him, he said. But then eventually Sugriva is the head of all that, isn't it? So he asked Sugriva, Ramchandra asked Sugriva, should we accept Vibhishana, he said. Sugriva says, no way, he says. There's no way we should accept him, he said. So when Sugriva said that, Ramchandra looked at Lakshmana and smiled. Valmiki only says that much, that he just smiled. And that smile was enough. Sugriva got the message. Why? Only a few months ago, that Sugriva has done exactly the same thing. Sugriva is saying to Ramchandra, how can we accept him? He is betraying his own brother, isn't it, Ravana? And he has come here taking our shelter. How can you trust him? One who has completely cheated his own brother. How can we trust him? So Ramchandra looked at Lakshmana and Lakshmana also smiled, because what Sugriva has done was the same thing, isn't it? Only a few months ago, that taking Ramchandra's help, he got his brother killed, Bali. And he is the one who is now talking this great principle to him. So when he heard that, Ramachandra smiled, and immediately Sugriva understood that, and he put his head down. He couldn't say anything further after that, when this incident happened. So, one who has done that, Valmiki says at that time, that Lashmanam Punyalakshanam, he says there. In the verse you will see there, that the verse what he has used was that...
Sudushto vapyasova kimesha rajanichana idrisham vyasanam praptam bharadam ya parityajed kovasa bhavetasya yamesana parityajed vanar adhivatyer vakyam shrutva swanidhir situ idu sadustyamanastu lakshmanam punyalakshanam idi hovajaka kakustu vakyam satya parakramaham.
Then, what matters if this knight is very dangerous or otherwise, if he can, Sugriva is saying, if he can desert his own brother at a time of peril, who he will not betray subsequently? He says, if he has done this to his own brother, what's the guarantee he will not do this to you tomorrow? He says, and Rama, who has heard all this, smiled a little and told following words to Lakshmana, about this situation with Vibhishana. He spoke to him about that. That Rama says to him that my approach is like this, that anyone who has taken my shelter, I will offer him shelter. Doesn't matter who it is. Anybody has taken shelter, I will offer him shelter. Even if he has got some defects in that person, still, if he surrenders unto me, it is my principle that I will accept them. And so don't think about it. Go and bring Vibhishana here. This is what Ramachandra said at that time to Sugriva. And then Vibhishana was brought in and Vibhishana surrendered to Ramachandra. Vibhishana surrendered to Ramachandra. So... Here, the important thing is that when Ramachandra said this to Sugriva, he says to him, even if it is Ravana, if he comes and surrenders, bring him over to me, I will accept him. That is how noble he was, Ramachandra was. If he has surrendered, I will accept him. This is Ramachandra's position. So, it doesn't matter. And because when Ramachandra spoke this, Sugriva felt a little bit uneasy. Why did he feel uneasy? Because he thought that I have spoken something, but I am myself not in that platform, isn't it? Like what he did with Bali, with that background, he couldn't say this to Ramchandra. But after speaking what he has spoken, he started thinking it was not proper for me to say what I said. He felt like that. He started feeling like that. Knowing that, what Ramchandra did immediately was, he said like this, it is very difficult to find certain qualities in people. For example, he says, you can never find a brother like Bharata, and you can never find a friend like Sugriva, he says. In other words, he was trying to pacify Sugriva. Although when he smiled to Lakshmana, Sugriva thought that both Lama and Lakshmana are not very happy with me for what I have spoken. But to get rid of that from Sugriva's mind, just to keep him peaceful, immediately Ramchandra said, he lifted Sugriva a little bit and spoke like this, that you can never find a friend like Bharata, and you can never find a brother like Bharata and a friend like Sugriva. In the next verse he says that. So and he says here, send him to bring him over, and he gave him shelter. So when all this story, which takes a long, the verses, when they start talking, they take a very, very long time to explain all these things. In depth, word by word, they start talking, expanding on that. So the whole story took hours and hours to discuss this. Vibhishana surrender. Vibhishana Sharanagati, it's called in the Ramayana. So when this Vibhishana surrender was spoken, by the time it was 3 or 4 hours. After all that was over, suddenly this person who I was talking about, who hears with full interest, who was sitting next to Periyanambi, he got up from there suddenly. He took his, they had this upper cloth. The dhoti and they had the upper cloth. He took his upper cloth and put it on his shoulder, and he started walking out from there. And it's quite unusual that when stories are spoken with a lot of rasa, or the taste, or when you're enjoying that story, people won't get up and go away like that, in the middle of that, isn't it? It's because you're so absorbed in the story. Story's power is like that, isn't it? If you talk Upanishads, people will get up and walk out very easily. They'll say, oh, what's all this about? Let me go to toilet, let me have a cup of tea, let me have some jalebi or whatever we are looking for. So, I'll finish all that and come. That's why Vedantam has got this problem. They call it dry Vedantam, they call it, isn't it? Yeah. Vedantam is called very dry because it's not very interesting to hear. All this Brahma, Maya, Jiva, Prarabdham, all these things is boring, isn't it? Not making any connection. But all these things, like Ramayana stories, as soon as you start speaking, it's not nice. What happened then? What happened? So story is like that, impact on the story, powerful it is, very powerful impact on the people. So our man, who is the best listener, he got up, put his cloth, upper cloth on the shoulder and walked out from there. Periyanambi started thinking something gone wrong now, what has happened, because it's quite an unusual thing to happen. So he called him back and said to him, why, what happened, he said. He says, what can happen, he says, what have you spoken so far? Now, I was thinking, when you were talking all these things, that you told, now last 3 hours you are talking about this incident, what happened when Vibhishana came to surrender. Vibhishana came and he wanted to surrender to Ramchandra. And Ramchandra knew he has come to surrender. But instead of accepting him, what did he do? He calls for a meeting straight away. Calls for a meeting. And he's asking everyone, whether should I accept him or not. Now, Vibhishana, imagine Vibhishana's situation. He has given up his only shelter, which was Ravana. He has given that up, given up all that. And he has come here looking for Ramchandra's shelter. And Ramchandra is interviewing him first. First making it like the modern interviews, as they are told, last for hours and hours. So, and at the end say no, so similarly. That the interview is going on, big interview, Ramchandra's interview. So before the interview, he is consulting all the other members of the panel, that he wants to inquire from them what they think about this, whether we should offer the shelter to Vibhishana or not. So this person who is listening, he thinks, he's saying, that it takes so much time to make a decision about Vibhishana. After all, he has surrendered everything and he had come, isn't it? You can't get a better surrender than Vibhishana. Can you imagine? He has given up all connections with his brother, whole family, everything has gone. It's finished. And you can't even go back to him anymore. If he goes back, Ravana will kill him. He knows that very well. And he has come here to take shelter and hear an interview going on. So this is what he says. It has really made me to think, this person is saying to Parinambi. I'm just thinking, in Vibhishana's case, if all this is required, I have no chance, he says. There is no chance I will get it, he said. It's no point in me wasting time here listening to this. That's why I'm leaving, he said. He leaves the place and goes away. Parinambi called him back. He said, sit down, he said. Things are not that bad, he said. Things are not that bad. What did he say to him? He said, it only took in Vibhishana's case a little time, isn't it, to make that decision. But as soon as Vibhishana was allowed to go through the system and everything was offered to him, you remember those three Rakshasas who had come with him, they also went with him. Because it's allowed with him, isn't it? You get through with him. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? In spiritual life, this is how it is. Krishna is like that. When a great devotee comes through, and with him, others will also get through with him. He got through, others also will get through. So the Rakshasa's case, there was no interview. Nothing was. Because they have come with Vibhishana, they also got through. So he says to, Parinambi says to him, you shouldn't worry about it, he said. Stay in the group, don't go. He says to him, you'll also get through one day. That is how, and then he sat back and started listening to him. So that made sense to him. That you will see this in the Bhagavatam also, some places, that Nalakavera and Manigriva had this problem. They were glorifying Krishna in the Bhagavatam, you can see that. They kept on glorifying, Krishna won't give any attention to that. They were glorifying in such higher level, Krishna was thinking, instead of glorifying me, why don't they remove all these ropes what has been tied around me with the tree, instead of talking all this to me. Said, when suddenly Narada Maharshi's name was mentioned, immediately Krishna started listening to it. That is the impact of the great devotees. So if we stay with great devotees, we have a shelter somewhere. There is some shelter. That when they get through, we also get through with them. That is the possibility there. It's not that in everyone's case, Krishna makes an interview and decides whether this one should be in or out, or is offered or not. So similarly, when you go directly to Krishna, there will be a discussion. There will be a discussion. So if you go through the Bhagavatam, there won't be any discussion. There won't be any discussion. So he told him to stay back. So therefore, in the Sri Vaishnava tradition, that they have nothing else. Last 25 years, he had been hearing Ramayanam continuously like this. And rest of the time, when he is not doing anything, he will do some service. He will do some service at that time. And most of the time, he will listen. He will be sitting and listening to Ramayanam. That was his life. That was his life. And this man was married. He was married and family, everything was there. So one day it so happened that family came up to Parinambi and complained about him. Told him that he has no time for family life. He has no time for family life. Early morning he leaves home to hear Bhagavatam or Ramayanam. And then the evening he comes home. Suppose you do that every day. What will happen? When you go back, there will be nobody at home. But in these days, it wasn't like that. So our friend, he goes every morning to hear Ramayanam, and whole day he will hear Ramayanam and goes home happily in the evening, waiting for the next day to come. That was his happiness in life. So absorbed in Ramayanam he was. These days it was like that. People lived in that style. So one day family members started seeing him that he had no time for any work at home or not giving any attention at home. So his wife came up and complained to Parinambi like this, that he's not giving any time for the family and completely busy with his with you and it is a big problem, he said. So Periyanambi thought he will speak to him and see what he says. So, so as I said before, that everybody else had come, spend a few years and they will leave. And then they'll get married and go to their own villages and they'll go form their own groups. In that way, they lived. But nobody stayed like him for such a long period of time, 25 years or so, he stayed like that. So one day, called him and said to him, "You have heard Ramayanam and Vishnupuranam from me so far," he said. Periyanambi said to him, Vishnupuranam is also important for the Ramanuja Sampradaya. It's an important text. Parashara Maharshi wrote Vishnupuranam. Vedavyasa Maharshi's father, Parashara Maharshi wrote Vishnupuranam. So that's an important book for them, Vishnu's past. All this, what you find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is the same pastimes present in the Vishnupuranam also. Nothing different much. But in Bhagavatam, Krishna is presented as the absolute truth. Vishnupuranam, Vishnu is presented as the supreme. So that's only difference there. Parashara Maharshi wrote that. So he says to him, "You heard Ramayanam and you heard Vishnupuranam for so many years now. What have you learned?" he said. What have you learned, he said. He says, "I've learned one," he says to him. What's that thing? "That after hearing all this, I can only tell you one thing. You should keep on talking this and I should keep on listening it," he says. That was the answer. I have to say, this is the only answer he gave. He says, "You keep on talking and I'll sit here, keep on listening to it." Why is that? That is called Shravana Sukham. Happiness and listening. Happiness and listening, Bhagavatam, Ramayanam. All this, particularly Srimad Bhagavatam, there are people who could speak Srimad Bhagavatam that way. They will keep you there for hours and hours talking about Krishna's childhood, Krishna's activities, Krishna's pastimes in that way. So he told him, he says to him, "When your stock is finished, tell me. Then I'll go," he says. "Then I'll also get up," he says. "When the stock is finished," he says. "But one thing I know, that both things are not going to happen. That your stock is never gets finished and I'm also not going to get up." This was his answer to him. So therefore, he called continuously, you say. That's what Krishna is saying here. Yadha yadalma parimrujyade so mal punya ghada shravana bhidhane. That verse. Yadha yadalma parimrujyade so mal punya ghada shravana bhidhane. Then, if you simply do like that, he says, that automatically purification will happen inside. Automatically without our knowledge. That is why katha is so powerful. Katha is so powerful. Without any effort, it will happen. Whereas all other things, you have to use your own effort to purifications, isn't it? Here it is happening without your knowledge. Is it not? Yadha yadhalma parimrujyade sau malpunya ghada shravanabhidane. It's a very famous verse in the Bhagavatam. Because in the first two lines, Krishna spoke about the power of kathashravanam, hearing. And in the next two lines, Krishna says, tatha tatha pasyadi vastu sushmam. He says, when that purification happens inside, automatically you will start seeing the soul inside. Sushma vastu. Vastu sushmam, he says. Tatha tatha pasyadi vastu sushmam. Sushma vastu. You will start realizing that I am not this body. Realization will come from within. Provided, if you had that way, Parikshit has heard Bhagavatam and also many great personalities. That's all the famous Bhagavatam speakers. They had this ability to carry the people along with them in their way. And they were able to transmit that. And you can see, when you hear Srimad Bhagavatam well, very well, particularly the 10th canto, Krishna's childhood, how you feel very light-hearted inside when you hear that properly. You feel all the heaviness has gone from inside, heart becomes very light inside, isn't it? So, that is why it's mentioned like this, that the way we hear Bhagavatam, especially the Krishna's pastimes, it melts the heart. It has the power to melt the heart. It has the power to melt the heart. Heart means chitam. Chitam gets melted.
says that that chittardrai bhavamuchair vabushija pulakam harshabashpam yahitva chittam shuddhyel katham va kimu bahudabasa vidyaya vidabhaktehe.
That chittardri bhavam, that means the mind starts melting, and
uchair vabushija pulakam harshabashpam yahitva chittam shuddhyel.
And when all these experience of ecstasy that comes from hearing Bhagavatam, when you hear, and in the body ecstatic feelings develop, and sometimes devotees cry when they hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they cry. And
kadhamva chittam shuddhyel, chittam shuddhyel kadhamva.
In that way, how you get purified?
Chittam shuddhyel kadhamva, kimu bahudabasa vidyaya vidabhaktehe.
You perform austerities and penances, like you can see Dhruva Maharaj and many others, they went to the forest to perform penances, isn't it? By why do we perform penances? To purify ourselves inside, isn't it? Tapasya. Tapasya is for purification. Like Dhruva Maharaj's performance of penances, you can see, in order to purify himself. So that way you get purified, and chittam shuddhi. Shuddhi happens, purification happens inside. But here the question is, out of these two, which is the easiest one? Easiest one is, there is no doubt, is hearing, isn't it? Shravanam. Shravanam is a much faster process.
Chittadri bhavam uchair vabushija pulagam harshabhashpam jahitva chittam shuddhyet kadhamva kimu bahudabasa vidyaya vidabhatehe.
For a devotee, that is a process. It's the easiest process. Who can go to the forest and perform austerities and penances like the way the great sages did in today's world? Who can do that? Like Dhruva Maharaj austerities, if you read in the Bhagavatam, it is practically not possible. Even to go to forest, we are frightened. What to talk about performing penances in the forest, isn't it? So you can see that that process worked with them, with Dhruva and many others like that. Great sages could do that. But in this age, particularly in Kali Yuga, Srimad Bhagavatam's potency comes there. That Vedavyasa Maharshi, knowing our situation, he compiled Bhagavatam for this purpose, so that we could hear about Krishna.
Tolghada swada siddhanjana sadadam arimrajyamano yamalma chakshurval tattva sushmam bhajadinatudada abhyastaya tarkakotyam.
So if you keep hearing Tulgada Swada Siddhanjana Sadadam, then it is a anjanam. Anjanam means just like this ink, what they put on. So like after cataract in the past, before cataract operations came, they had a system whereby a particular ink was put in the eye, whereby your eyesight could get better. So when you get your eyesight better, in the same way, that hearing Srimad Bhagavatam purifies the heart. And what will happen?
Chakshurva tattva sushmam.
Sushma tattvam. Sushma tattvam means the soul here. That is the sushma tattvam inside. Isn't it?
Tattvam bhajati natudada bhyastaya tarka kotyam.
So how fast you reach and find the soul, identification with the soul, through Bhagavata Shravanam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it is not possible to reach that through other processes of austerities and penances. In order to stress the importance of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, this is spoken in the Ekadasha Skandam. That is why,
yadha yadalma parimirjadeso malpunya ghada shravanabhidhane tadha tadha pasyadi vastu sushmam chakshudrivai anjana samprayuktam.
So this situation with bhakti, what is discussed here, is Krishna wants to, as I mentioned before, Ekadasha Skandam is centered around bhakti. Bhakti is the message. And also Krishna has spoken about jnanam. Sometimes jnanam, sometimes about bhakti. You will see this alternating there all the time. Throughout Ekadasham you will see this. That few chapters you will talk about jnanam, then he will go switch on to bhakti. And then from bhakti you will come back to jnanam again. Later you will see that. And then again eventually you come to bhakti. So this is constantly happening here. And that is why he says here that the this nature, he says, so this possibility, he says here, that the how the mind becomes affected by Krishna's activities, and it will create another world of its own inside. So those who are very seriously absorbed in the Bhagavatam, they'll create another world within, outside this world. They'll create another world within. Bhavamandalam, they call it. Bhavamandalam. Bhavamandalam means a world of imagination of their own. Inside they create there. And only when that world is created, that is where the Swarupam, our pure identity, will shine in that. Our pure identity will shine in that world. Because that world is not the world of our mind at the moment. Our mind is there. But when this new world develops, which is known as Bhavamandalam, when that develops, this mind disappears completely from there. That's when they say, there is no such thing called mind. There's no such thing called mind. We keep on working on the mind all the time. Everybody is saying that we have to purify, we have to change the mind. But mind is not something you can change. Mind is a anirvachaniya, it is an undefinable source, energy that's coming out in the form of the mind. Somebody asked, how do you control the mind? The answer was given that when you realize the self, there won't be any such thing called mind. Mind is gone completely. That otherwise you can't control the mind. Mind is the most difficult thing to control. So when we hear, you can see this, that many, many great devotees, they have followed this process, and how to live in that world, another world of Krishna's pastimes, how to live in that world. That means completely absorbing in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, particularly the 10th canto. And when you hear about that, and when you hear about the great devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Krishna's pastimes, Vrindavanam, and the places associated with those pastimes, automatically a person feels a tremendous feeling of devotion inside. In a natural way, it develops in the heart. Those who have read Srimad Bhagavatam well, those who have studied Bhagavatam very well, after many years of studying Bhagavatam, when they go to Vrindavanam and associate with places in relationship with Krishna, in naturally that feeling comes inside. That this is where Krishna, about whom I have heard so far, this is where all these pastimes happen. Here happened, Kaliya was killed here, rasa dances happened here, these things. And if you go there and start like a scientist finding out, is this where it has happened, where is the proof? And all that, if you start asking, that won't work. That is not the idea. But this is a different world. We live in that different world. Paramarthiya drashti. And if you keep asking that, how do you know, is it somebody else, that this is where Kali exactly, this has happened in this location. This is how our mind goes, isn't that way? But a devotee who heard Bhagavatam very well and studied Srimad Bhagavatam, he would never again think in that way. He would never again think it that way. So he is thinking, devotee feels happiness when you go to such places because purification has already happened inside. Then once the purification has happened, then he will not inquire again whether that is the place where it has happened. Normally, otherwise, if you bring an ordinary person, bring him to Vrindavanam and show him all these places where rasa dances happened, where killing of Kaliya has happened, and several other pastimes, they will definitely, in their own inside, they will think, is this all genuinely happening here? Suppose you show the tree to them, where Krishna has hung all the clothes of the gopis. They're still there, they show the tree to the people, isn't it? People generally ask the question, that how old is this tree? Is it 5,000 years old? Or it doesn't, and then the scientists can tell you, and they will bring some gadget and start checking out the life of the tree. This is how the mind goes, isn't it? But for a devotee, he doesn't think like that. He thinks that, this is what I was saying yesterday, one is a fact, one is the truth. Truth is more important than the fact, because if you can go on investigating everything in this world with all the gadgets to find out whether it's true or not, but the fact remains that the person has studied Srimad Bhagavatam, he had great happiness by going to Vrindavanam and seeing these places, and he gets a great pleasure from that. And in his world where he is living, he is purifying himself by that association. with Krishna in that way. He is getting purified, whereas the other person is still in his world of logic, in his world of logic. So, let those who are in their world of logic, let them stay in their world of logic. Doesn't matter. One day they will also realize all this so-called logic is all bogus. It is not going to solve the problem. So, little by little, when our consciousness gets purified, then all our base qualities changes. That means our impurities inside goes away. That's what you will observe at that time. And only at that time, the soul will start showing its power from inside. Our purpose is to reach the soul. How the soul to manifest inside, isn't it? To lose this bodily identity and to understand that we are a spirit soul. That is the purpose of all these things. To how to come to that state. But at the moment, because of the impurities in the heart, it's not allowing that happening. Krishna is saying, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and associating with Krishna, you will create another world inside, another Bhava Mandalam inside, whereby you will, living in that world, you will lose all these impurities from inside. When the impurities have gone away, at that point you will see that the soul is coming out from inside and showing the presence of the soul inside. And that is the state where there is no mind. When there is no mind anymore existing inside. That's why Krishna says earlier, you will see Satwal Sanjayade Jnanam. That means, when the mind is purified, it has come to the mode of goodness. Isn't it? Mode of goodness has come now. After hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's pastimes, Katha, in the Bhagavatam, hearing continuously after a long period of time, it will purify inside, which means Sattvagunam will develop. And Krishna is saying in the Bhagavatam, Satwal Sanjayade Jnanam. When Sattvagunam is inside, very powerfully working inside, knowledge must come there, or realization must come to that person. So that is the next step. First purification, then Sattvagunam. From Sattvagunam, knowledge. Sattvagunam, knowledge. So knowledge means what? That's the question, isn't it? Knowledge means that inside you start realizing that aham, 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 that I am, I am, I am, that identification with the soul. At the moment we say, I am aham brahmasmi, but we will start experiencing that aham brahmasmi. An experience of aham brahmasmi, that which is referred to in the Bhagavatam as the chit shakti, starts functioning from inside. Chit shakti. That's why he says here, and that will start manifesting, that our nature, what we spoke before. What is that nature? Nityam, eternity. Shuddham, always pure. Muktam, always liberated. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Muktam. And always conscious. Consciousness of that. Always consciousness, isn't it? Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Suryuvam. That is the nature of the soul. So, that Sushma Vastu, Krishna says here, isn't it? Chakshudriva, Tatha Tatha Pashyati Vastu Sushmam. That Sushma Vastu, or in other words, that absolutely subtle thing called the soul, we will start realizing, we start seeing the soul. Seeing means experiencing it, its presence. And Sushma means what? It is not stulam, it's not gross, isn't it? Mind, intelligence, senses, all these things cannot touch any Sushma, cannot touch Sushma. Only when the mind is completely purified and it becomes completely sushmam, subtle, only in that case this spurti, Bhagavatam uses that word spurti. Spurti means the soul inside starts its movement from within. We start to understand, we start understanding with the mind, we start experiencing that we are not this body. We are not this body. This will start experiencing from inside. It will come. That all these years we have thought ourselves to be this body, looked after this body, maintained it, everything, and complete attachment to the body goes away. Why we attach to the body? Because we don't know anything else. That's why we are attached to the body, isn't it? But moment we start seeing that's what Krishna is saying here. Tatha tatha pashyati vastu sushmam. Gradually, that sushma vastu, the soul inside, if it gives you some signals from inside that I am here, and immediately your attention, identity will go towards that. It will happen in a natural way. That's what Krishna is saying here. Tatha tatha pashyati vastu sushmam chakshuddhivai anjanasam prayuktam. That is the interesting thing in the Bhagavadam. Normally, Upanishad says only with knowledge it will happen. But Krishna is saying in the Bhagavadam, it can happen with bhakti. It can happen with bhakti. It will come. But what Jnani realizes through knowledge, that realization will happen to the devotee at that stage. In other words. So, Krishna said that in the next verse, isn't it? Vishayan dhyayadas chittam vishayeshu vishajyate. Ma manusmaradas chittam mayeva praviliyate. There is a verse there. You will see 27. Vishayan dhyayadas chittam vishayeshu vishajyate. Ma manusmaradas chittam mayeva praviliyate. He says here. That is what Krishna is saying here. That as much as this bodhaspurti. Bodhaspurti means that the soul giving you this signal from inside. Bodham, consciousness. Right now, the only signal what we have from the soul is awareness of me, isn't it? My existence. That's definitely coming from the soul, not from the body. I exist. As I said, in all the three states, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, all the three states, you are aware of your existence. As soon as you move to the dream state, the gross body has gone. You can't identify with the gross body anymore. As soon as the dream state is gone, mind is also gone. You can't identify either with the mind or with the gross body. All that is left behind is the soul. But the fact that when you come through the deep sleep, back to awakened state again, all you have one thing to report is that the great time you had in the deep sleep. Isn't it? So in other words, the soul which goes through in all these three states which is experiencing, he is saying to us that it is me, the reality, not the any other things. I am the only reality. That's what it is telling us. That I am the only reality. The soul is the only reality. And immediately we get that message from inside. We start going towards that. Our attention, Shraddha, moves towards that and we become identified with that. Right now, because we identify with the body, we think we are this body. Because of identification only, isn't it? Just like a man, he identifies at home as a father or a husband. He goes to office, he is an executive or CEO or MDO, whatever it is. Or if he is a minister, he identifies with that job, I am the minister. So everything is identification at the end. You identify with the body, you identify with the body, you are that body. You identify with the soul. So why is it happening? Because inside we are convinced that we are this body. So when that conviction goes away from inside, when that is what Krishna is saying, for which the purification is necessary. Yatha yad alma parimurjyate so malpunya ghada shravana vidhane tatha tatha pashyati vastu sushmam chakshurdivai anjanasam prayuktam. That when that purification happens, Krishna is saying, it is Krishna's word, so you have to accept that. There is no other choice there. Tatha tatha pashyati vastu sushmam. You will see that, Krishna is saying there, that the soul inside, and naturally your identification will go towards the soul. Towards the soul. Krishna said all these things and also said that Vishayan dhyayas chittam vishayeshu vishajyate. If you absorb your mind, instead of absorbing in Bhagavadam, if you absorb your mind in sense objects and sense enjoyment, vishayeshu vishajyate, you will sink in that. Mam anusmaradas chittam, if you remember about Krishna and absorb in Krishna, mayeva praviliyate, you have to come to me. There is no choice there. So it's only a question of absorption. If you absorb in the senses and sensual world, sense gratification, you will become attracted by that and you will be drawn by that. Similarly, Krishna says, if you get attracted to me, when Krishna says attracted to me, devotees will say as a person, Krishna. Jnanis will say the soul. You know, that's the only difference. In either way, ma manusmaradas chittam, what will happen? Mayeva praviliyate, you will get dissolved in me. You will get dissolved in me. After saying that, Krishna talked about the mind, that not to allow the mind into enter into any kind of asata. Asata means, and that's why he said asadavidhyanam, isn't it? That word asadavidhyanam. Asadavidhyanam means anything that is asata. If you absorb your mind anything in the asata, asata means all that is not permanent, temporary. It is only temporary. So, and that is what he says here. Don't allow the mind to go into asadavidhyanam. He said that. That's in it. That verse, which is the 28th verse. Tasmad asadavidhyanam yatha sotna manoratham hitva mai samadhalswa mano madbhava bhavidam. Krishna says there, isn't it? Tasmad asadavidhyanam yatha sotna manoratham. Because swapnam, our dreams, during the day also this is what we do, isn't it? Swapnam. And traveling in the mental chariot, making plans for the future, doing this, doing that. And our plans for enjoyment for the next financial year or the many years thereafter. Normally everything is centered around time now, isn't it? Time is the main thing in our life. And we plan everything based on time, isn't it? Everything is based on time. So sense enjoyment is also based on time. That in this year, let me have this much sense happiness, traveling here, traveling there, all these kind of things. So, what is interesting here is that in chapter 13, if you remember, Krishna spoke Hamsa Gita. Krishna spoke Hamsa Gita, which is the pinnacle of knowledge, self-realization knowledge. And everything I know, whatever we have discussed in that chapter, it would have just gone like this. Impossible to connect with that. It is so difficult, isn't it? So many things Krishna is saying there. The four Kumaras goes and asks Brahma this question. And Brahma saying that, I also don't know the answer. So then first thing what will happen to us, will say, Brahma didn't know it. What chance have we got then? That's the first thing. And then after that, Brahma, Krishna comes there in the form of the Hamsam and instructs Brahma and the four Kumaras and all that heavy, heavy verses, 10, 12 verses there. Drishtim dada pratinivartya nivrta tishna tushnim bhave bhavasukhani bhavo niriha. Krishna is saying that take your attention from the world completely and fully focused on the soul inside. All sorts of things Krishna has spoken in the 13th chapter. And as soon as Krishna left the 13th chapter and moved on to the 14th chapter, the whole subject changed. Whole subject automatically, quickly changed. In 13th, big Vedanta in the 13th chapter. And that too with the best clarity, with the highest clarity he has spoken there. The philosophy and pure knowledge. And immediately the next chapter that Krishna is saying that go after the devotees, he says here in the next chapter, in the 14th chapter. And purify yourself with the dust from their feet, isn't it? He said that in the earlier verses. If you look into that verse, he says, Nirabeksham Munim Shandam in the 16th verse. Nirabeksham Munim Shandam Nurvairam Samadarshinam Anuvrajamyaham Nityam Puyeyetyangrire Nubhi. Then he says, Krishna is saying, after saying all this highest knowledge in the 13th chapter, which is pure Vedanta philosophy, straight after that in the 14th chapter, Krishna is saying, I walk behind all these realized souls to purify myself. I take the dust from their feet and purify me. He says like this. Now, when somebody reads all these things, there's naturally a question, isn't it? What should we do? On the one hand, the 13th chapter is laying this. So, what is the connection between the two? This is the important thing, isn't it? Bhagavadam is like that. Bhagavadam is like that. It will never allow you to stay in one fixed path. And fixed path. It is interesting actually. You have to take all this into account when you are thinking about your own spiritual life. This is why it's spoken all these things. This is why it's spoken like that. Bhagavadam, when you read, you will see these things and you will think yourself, why is it like that in this chapter? 13th chapter, Krishna spoke the highest philosophy of self-realization. And after reading through all that, you understood that it's not for me. It's not possible to think the way it is spoken there. Immediately Krishna comes down and says in the very next chapter, Uddhava, I follow those realized souls, I take the dust from their feet and talks about bhakti in the most exalted way. Krishna has spoken in the 14th chapter. So, first time, first knowledge, immediately after that bhakti, Krishna has spoken. So, the reason for that is that Bhagavatam will not allow you to get stuck with one fixed idea. With a fixed idea. Because if you get blocked in a fixed idea, there's always problem in spiritual life. It's always like that. Because you may get fixed up with something and in your own spiritual life you will notice someone else who is performing spiritual life in a different way making a lot of progress in spiritual path. In different ways it can happen like that. So therefore, in spiritual life comes to Bhagavata philosophy is that Bhagavatam will stress about jnanam, about yogam, about karmam, about bhakti. Particularly jnanam and bhakti is spoken alternatively. Either jnanam or bhakti. Because what is expected of us is this. That so if you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, that particularly the problem is that continuously if we speak about jnana yogam, jnanam, what Krishna has spoken, and if you keep stressing that, you will feel very difficult. You will feel very difficult. Once it so happened, a famous sannyasi went to America and he was so learned in Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. He was lecturing from Bhagavad Gita in American universities. So he was talking one day about Karma Yoga. About Karma Yoga he spoke. He spoke so well about Karma Yoga, and all the audience who heard him about Karma Yoga, they all felt that Karma Yoga is the path for self-realization. They were so attracted by his lecture on Karma Yoga that day. He spoke so much about Karma Yoga, quoting from Upanishads, Brahma Sutram and all the other Vedic literature and from Bhagavad Gita, that he presented Karma Yoga so well to them, all the audience felt this is what Karma Yoga is, the most important thing in the Bhagavad Gita. They all went home. It was a series of lectures. The next day he had to speak from Bhakti Yoga. He spoke about bhakti in the same way like he spoke about Karma Yoga. So one student who was there listening to him, after the class was over, he went up to him and said, "Are you causing confusion in our mind? Yesterday you said Karma Yoga is everything, and today you are coming and telling us that this Bhakti Yoga is the major important process for self-realization. You are saying like this to us," he said. So this Swamiji said to him that yesterday was yesterday, today is today, he said. It's different. And listen to me, and he says, and then the next day again, he spoke about Jnana Yoga. So one day Karma Yoga, one day Bhakti Yoga, one day Jnana Yoga. He spoke the three different days, three different yoga processes. And each day they felt that when they spoke about Bhakti Yoga, they felt Bhakti Yoga is the process they should follow. When he spoke about Karma Yoga, they felt that Karma Yoga is the process we should follow. And when he spoke about Jnana Yoga, all of them felt we should follow Jnana Yoga. In other words, they were so confused after the 3 days, after hearing all the three yoga systems. So they went up to him and said to him that, "Are you trying to hypnotize us? That you are telling us every time, and every time we are getting convinced from what you are saying that what is the right thing to do." So he told them that there is no need to hypnotize you. You are already hypnotized. You are already hypnotized by Maya. I'm only trying to dehypnotize you from your state of hypnosis. So that is why in the Bhagavatam you will notice there that you have to understand Srimad Bhagavatam in the same way. Somewhere you will see it is spoken jnanam, somewhere you will see bhakti is spoken in a very powerful way. And somewhere jnanam is spoken in a very powerful way. This is called in the Shastram as moment by moment, pratibodha vihidam. Pratibodha vihidam. So we also have to learn this technique to understand Bhagavatam. Otherwise it will be very difficult. How to understand Bhagavatam in this way? Otherwise, for example, suppose we are fixed in one place. So I am a devotee, I am not interested in jnanam, I am not interested in karmam. Then you will find it difficult to relate with Srimad Bhagavatam. So not naturally, this technique is like this. When you have bhakti, devotion inside, you should stay as a devotee. When you have yogam inside, ashtanga yogam, pranayama and all that, you should remain as a yogi. And when you have karma, attracted by karma yogam, you should remain as a karma yogi. And when you have karmam to perform, you should remain as a karma yogi. When you are in the mood of acquiring knowledge, shastric knowledge, understanding shastram, you should remain as a jnani. Or when you are executing, when you are feeling bhakti inside, devotion to Krishna, you should remain as a devotee, bhakti. Everything is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is a book of knowledge, book of devotion as well, in the same way. So, ultimately, if you look at it, in reality, karma yogam, bhakti yogam, jnana yogam, these are all processes there. Nothing else. Goal is that what Bhagavatam is talking about is till we realize the truth, only all this has meaning. This terminology of bhakti yogam, jnana yogam, karma yogam, this is only there till you get to the point of self-realization. Once the truth is realized, then what does it matter which yoga system you have come and what yoga system? There you will notice that all this yoga system is practically one. They are not different. You can see this also while executing. Nobody can say clearly that I am only following the process of bhakti or I am only following the process of jnanam. So whether jnanam, karmam or bhakti, they all play their role at different times. But when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, and if you are reading a chapter in relationship with jnana margam, jnanam process, you should not think it has nothing to do with me. You should remain as a jnani at that time. And when you are reading anything related to karmam, what Krishna talks about, you should remain as a karma yogi at that time. That should be the way our mind should be. Openness there. That is Bhagavata Dharma. Bhagavatam is like that. You will never be able to choose in Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is not given for a choice. Although every process has its own strength and weaknesses. Every process has its own strength and weaknesses. Some processes, and Krishna also says that later on in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? That he says there that the jnana margam is for people with who have a lot of detachment, renunciation from this world, and who are very completely renounced from this world, for and who have very sharpness of their chitta shuddhi is there, and they also have the sharpness of the intelligence. For them jnana margam is recommended, and those who are very attached, for them karma margam is recommended, and who are neither attached nor renounced, for them bhakti margam is recommended. Krishna has spoken that later on in the Bhagavatam about different yoga processes. Although everything is spoken like that, in different chapters Krishna is stressing different things, isn't it? In 13th chapter Krishna spoke about jnanam of the highest order, Vedantam, he has spoken there. And straight after that in the 14th chapter Krishna talks about bhakti on a very higher level. So whenever we read any chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam, although you may get that vibration from the Bhagavatam, it is talking about bhakti, you should take that attitude, mood at that time. For example, in the fifth canto, when you read Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, all that glorification there of the 100 children of Rishabhadev, who were instructed by Rishabhadev, Rishabhadev's instructions to children. Nayam deho deha bhajana loge kashtan kaman arkhade vidbhujam ye tabodivyam putraga yena sattvam shuddhye dasmad brahma saukhyam tvanandam. From that verse onwards, there's about 40 verses or so where vairagyam is stressed, renunciation. Vairagyam is stressed. So the vairagyam is an aspect of self-realization. You can't say that, oh, this is not for me. It's also necessary. So Bhagavatam, we have to take it in that way. Otherwise, we will find it difficult. As and when whatever chapter brings in front of us, brings whatever it brings in front of us, we have to change ourselves to that mood. To that mood. That's what Sukadeva Goswami has done. Have you noticed that? Whenever he spoke about any personality in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when he was talking about Uddhava, he becomes Uddhava. When he talks about the gopis, he becomes a gopi. When he talks about Akrura, he becomes Akrura. When he talks about Kunti Devi, he becomes Kunti Devi. And that's how, as though he speaks as though Kunti Devi is speaking. That's how Bhagavatam's flow is in the Bhagavatam. Similarly, when Bhishma was speaking, he becomes Bhishma. Not that he physically becomes Bhishma, but he becomes that consciousness of Bhishma enters into his heart. And he speaks in that mood of Bhishma. He speaks, isn't it? So similarly, while we are studying Bhagavatam also, in different places you will see, some places Jnanam comes up, some places Vairagyam comes up, some places Bhakti comes, sometimes Karmam comes, whatever it may be, ultimately the truth is the soul. The soul is the only truth. These are processes to get us to that point, to come to that realization, or to leave our identity with the body and come to the platform of Brahman realization, isn't it? Nishchala Tattvam, as it is called. Nishchala Tattva is Jivan Mukti. The Nishchalada, Nishchalada means what? Nishchalada means that tranquility inside. That Salsangatve Nisangatvam. From Salsangam comes Nisangam. Nisangam means attachment goes. Through Salsangam, attachment goes away. Nisangatvam comes. Nisangatve Nirmohatvam. From Nisangada or detachment comes, what will happen is nirmohatvam, delusion goes away. When attachment goes away, then delusion goes away. Delusion means a lot of illusions we have carrying in our head at the moment, isn't it? About this world, about our position in this world. So many misunderstanding in our head about ourselves, which is false. Nisangatve nirmohatvam. Nirmohatve nischalatattvam. When that illusion goes away from inside, nischala tattva, we become very stable and settled. Nischala tattva, jivan mukti. And in that state, jivan mukti comes. Jivan mukti means you get liberated while in this body itself. You are liberated. That is the answer to that. Salsangatve, nisangatvam, nisangatve, narmohatvam. Narmohatve, nischala tattva, nischala tattva, jivan mukti. Jivan mukti comes at that time. So, here, in that nischala tattvam, nischalata, or that tranquil state, if you are experiencing karma yogam at that time, karma yogam will happen in the person. Similarly, if jnana yogam comes up, jnana yogam will come out from him. And the, similarly, when bhakti yogam comes, bhakti will develop in that person. So, if there is nothing else happening, he will be silent. Mauinam gachet. So, that is why Krishna said there, in that verse, if you look in the Jnana Yogam chapter, Krishna mentions there, Dishtim tada prati nivritya nivritta tishna tushnim bhavet nijasukhanu bhavo niriham. Krishna says, tushnim bhavet nijasukhanu bhavo niriham. Krishna is saying like that. But Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava, what I have to say to you is this, that when the mind is absorbed in the world outside, which is called Behirmugam. Behirmugam means external, going external. And when it is suffering in that state, somehow or the other, you should bring that mind back towards inward looking, towards inside. And for that purpose, sadhana is necessary. Sadhana is necessary in order to bring that from the world outside to inward. And upasana, sadhana or upasana. Without that, it will not happen. and simply by reading books and using the intellectually understanding things is not sufficient. Intellectually understanding things is not sufficient. Upasana or sadhana is required.
Upasanam vina jnanam naivasyal iti nishchayaha.
Without upasana, jnanam will not happen. Some upasana is required, he says. Otherwise, how can he have any success in spiritual life? Upasana means our sadhana. In other words, regularly a certain amount of commitment to spiritual life in some form. Like for devotees, it's chanting the holy name. Chanting the holy name. At least a certain number of rounds every day on a fixed basis one should chant. Of course, in the advanced state, a devotee chants more. But in the early days, at least before we reach that state, we have to have a certain fixed number of times one should chant the holy name. So, otherwise, this mind which is continuously disturbed all the time, going in all directions, and it has to get fixed, rooted somewhere, it has to get anchored somewhere. And that will only happen, that is the process. By chanting the holy name, immediately the mind becomes more fixed in one state. And in that way, quietly, when this process follows, sadhana process follow, all this knowledge what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavadam, it will all make sense. Through sadhana only it will make sense. Without sadhana it won't make sense. Still not through the intelligence you are trying to understand that. So what does the sadhana do then? How does sadhana changes us in our thinking? What happens is, when one engages in sadhana for a long period of time, and when that purification inside happens, in a natural way, the attention goes away from the thing what you see to the person who is seeing. In other words, what you see is drishyam. Drishyam means what you see in this world, isn't it? That is drishyam. You start thinking, who is seeing this? This question will come in our own mind, or naturally start thinking. Variety of things we are observing in this creation. In this creation, we are seeing variety of things. But somehow or the other, our attention is only on the things what you see. And if you look carefully, you can see, drishyam is maya. Person who is seeing drik is Krishna. You see that? Drishyam and drikka. Drikka is us. The person who is seeing inside is connected with Krishna. He is Krishna's part and parcel, or the soul who is coming from Krishna is the one who is seeing. The thing what you are seeing, drishyam what you are seeing, is part of maya. Prakriti is mayas, isn't it? Maya, this material world or the creation, what we are seeing with our eyes, is maya. That's what we are seeing. Our present attention is all in the drishyam. Is it not? Our attention is in the drishyam. To shift that attention from drishyam to drik, who is seeing, that is done by the sadhana. Sadhana does that. That is where your self-realization becomes very intense at that time. That we are chanting the holy name. Why are we chanting the holy name? There must be some goal behind it, isn't it? Otherwise, why do we chant the holy name? Or is it that because I made a commitment that I'll chant the holy name, I'm chanting the holy name? Somebody told me, you chant the holy name 16 rounds every day. And I'm chanting 16 rounds every day, not knowing why I'm chanting. That is no use, isn't it? The goal behind that is that we should know why we are chanting. Purpose is this, that spiritual inspiration or spiritual thought hasn't developed inside yet. Right now, my attention is in the world outside. I'm still attracted by all the beauty of the world, all the so many things happening in this creation, which is nothing but maya. It is maya's domain, this world, this creation. Why? It is continuously changing. That's why it's maya. But someone inside who is seeing everything but who is not changing, that is drikka. In the Sanskrit, these two words are important, drikka and drishyam. Drishyam is what you see, drikka is the person who is the seer, who is seeing. So our problem here now is that our attention is in the drishyam, it has to move towards the drikka. So that thing happens from sadhana. That will only happen through sadhana. When sadhana is for this purpose, that initially everything will not be spoken. You will be told that you do this sadhana and you see what happens. When you continue doing that sadhana, you will come to know one day that interest in the world outside goes. No attraction to the world anymore, because you know very well that there is no reality in this world, what you are searching for. The truth is not there. So, that is what Krishna says here, that the therefore this yoga system, somehow or the other, to shift our attention from the world outside towards the soul, this sadhana is a necessity. How do you say? Necessity. Love of God and attachment to holy name in the devotees will describe in different ways what will happen to a devotee in the advanced stage. But simultaneously we should know what is going to happen to us in this process. When attraction towards the soul, at the moment we consider that we have an understanding Krishna's form in the deity form. We see Krishna. And because we don't know Krishna, only Bhagavatam is there in front of us to tell us about Krishna. Or even the person who has spoken to us about Krishna, we don't know whether he has seen Krishna. We have to believe that he has seen Krishna, isn't it? So therefore he is telling us that he has seen Krishna, we accept it that way. But definitely there is no clear proof in front of us. I have not seen Krishna. Somebody else has seen Krishna, I don't know. He is saying he has seen Krishna. I have to accept it like that. And all the other personalities also, whom we refer to as authority, we have to accept their word. That's all we have the choice at the moment, isn't it? We have to believe that they have seen Krishna. But when it becomes your own experience, it's a different story. It's a different story. It is then that you have to get this experience that, and that stepping stone from drishyam to drik is an important step in spiritual life. Important step in spiritual life. It is then that you start seeing this world, which I have given so much importance all along, has no value in relationship with the soul. Soul is something different. That is, soul is the one. Today we have no information on the soul. Only the theory what Krishna has given in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, that's all what we have got. But when you start experiencing yourself, you start recognizing that is what Krishna has spoken in the earlier words. Tatha tada pasyadi vastu sushum. Everything when you experience, it's a different story. Rather than the what is spoken in the book or what is spoken by great authorities. Even all that changes, isn't it? Immediately it changes when it becomes your own experiences. So, that is why it says here, therefore Krishna says that because it's necessary like that, when that attention comes, you should go into solitude, in loneliness, and start thinking about it. When you start getting that mood from inside to reflect on the soul, you should develop that further from there. And nothing which will remind you of sense enjoyment should not be anywhere nearby. Anything related to sense enjoyment. That is the reason Krishna says that you go and stay in a place like that and stay in kshame vivikta masinam chindayenma atandridaha. You remember that verse? When we looked at it in the verse last Sunday, Krishna mentions there, kshame vivikta masinam chindayenma atandrita. There is a verse in the meditation process, Krishna says. That was in the Bhagavad Gita, sorry. That was in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions. Kshame vivikta masinam chindayenma atandrita. here also is there, 29th verse. Kshemi vivittama sinam chindayanme matandridaha. He says that. In the same thing will come in the Bhagavad Gita also. Srinam Srisanginam Sangam Tektva Durada Alpavan. Kshemi vivittama sinam chindayanma matandrida. Krishna spoke there that those who wants to advance in the path of self-realization, he should stay. Srinam Srisanginam Sangam for men and for women, Purusha and Purusha Sanginam. Keep distance, he says. It's necessary. Why? Krishna says there, isn't it? As I mentioned before, one who had 16,108 wives, he is saying this to us. That Srinam Sri Sanginam Sangam Tektva Durada Atmavan, he is saying to us. Why? Kshame Vivikta Masinam Chindayanma Adandrida. In other words, Krishna is always Drikka. For him, all this don't apply. These rules don't apply to Krishna because he is always Drikka.
we are always in the drishyam. We are not in the drik stage yet. So when you are in the drik stage, it means the seer, and drishyam means the seeing, seer and the seen. When you are in the seer stage, when you start recognizing, Krishna says, go into loneliness. You should not be anywhere near anything which will agitate your mind. Go into solitude. That is why Krishna says, that's why he said, Srinam Sri Sanginam Sangam Tektva Durada Almavan Kshemi Vivittam Asinam Chindayanma Atandrida. He said in the next verse, if you look into Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna will say the same thing. If you look into chapter 6, where in the 6th chapter, you will see there is a verses 11th and 12th, how one should sit down. Shujau deshe pratishthapya stiram asanam atmana natu chidam nati nijam chailanjana kushottaram tatraigagram manakritva yada chitendriya kriya ubhavishasane yunjyad yogam atmavishuddhaye. When it comes to dhyanam meditation, Krishna is saying there that shujau deshe pratishthapya, you should stay in a place which is pure. Stiram asanam atmana, and sitting there, nati uchidam nati nijam chailanjana kushottaram. Go to a secluded place, he says there, isn't it? Shujau deshe pratishthapya. He goes to a secluded place and nati uchidam nati nijam chailanjana kushottaram. And practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place and should lay kusha grass on the ground and then cover it with the deer skin and a soft cloth. Seat should be neither too high nor too low, nor should be situated in a sacred place. Yogi should then sit on it very firmly and should practice yoga by controlling the mind and the senses, purifying the heart and fixing the mind on one point. So it is at this stage, when our attention, that is why I remember when we discussed Bhagavad Gita earlier also we said that unless we have finished with this world outside, it is impossible to be focused on the truth. It's more simple to be focused on the truth. So that's why Krishna is saying here that the place where one should perform that meditation. So will that continue after 10 minutes or so? We'll take to Bhagavad Gita then.